Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production.
Now available on Apple Podcasts,
Podcast One, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Are we headed for socialism or fascism or something in between? What is the Democrats' true agenda? Also, what is the state of the 2020 race? What does Donald Trump need to do in the debate? How should he handle the Hunter Biden question? All of that and more in a wide-ranging speech where I take over 15 questions from the audience and I give some very specific answers to what we are dealing with in a speech that people say was one of the most timely and best speeches we've had an opportunity to give in recent months. We did this at Calvary Chapel of the Harbor with my good friend Pastor Joe. Great people there. Please consider supporting our program at charliekirk.com/support. charliekirk.com/support. We are doing two podcasts a day, 2 hours of radio a day. We are traveling the country, crisscrossing the country, trying to get our president reelected and saving our country. You guys can always email us, freedom@charliekirk.com, freedom@charliekirk.com. We are fighting hard thanks to your support. If you want to win a signed copy of the MAGA Doctrine, type in Charlie Kirk Show to your podcast provider, hit subscribe, give us a 5-star review, screenshot it, and email it to us at freedom@charliekirk.com. We are fighting. We are traveling. Time to win. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
I'm going to be really direct with you guys. If your cellular plan is with Verizon, AT&T, or T-Mobile, you're just paying too much. You are paying too much for the exact same coverage. Look at your cell phone bill where it shows data usage. The average person who switches to PureTalk is using less than 4 gigs of data a month. But the big carriers are charging you for unlimited data. It's like paying for an entire row on an airplane, but you only need one seat. That's how PureTalk saves the average person $400 a year on their wireless service. Unlimited text, talk, and 2 gigs of data, all for just $20 a month. And if you go over on data usage, they don't charge you for it. Folks, switching to PureTalk is the easiest decision you'll make today. Grab your mobile phone and dial #250 and say Charlie Kirk. When you do, you'll save 50% off your first month. Dial #250 and say Charlie Kirk, PureTalk, simply smarter wireless.
I want to ask this question first and foremost. What is your feelings, or what do you think about, what is your opinion on the pastors these days that are keeping their doors closed? I'll start with this. I believe now is not a time to close the church doors with everything that's happening.
And see, unlike the presidential debates, I haven't seen any of these questions in advance for Joe Biden. So, no, I haven't. I have no idea what he's going to ask. So, look, this is a really telling moment for our country and for the pastor community out there. I think there's three types of pastors and three types of churches right now. There's the courageous, the complacent, and the complicit. There are three different categories. You're looking at a courageous pastor right here in a courageous church. That's what you're looking at. You are. Then there's the complacent. There's the churches that are afraid. They're the churches that don't think you should engage in the public square. They're the churches that, for whatever reason, do not look deep enough in the scriptures to find numerous examples of God's people influencing secular government. Whether it be Nehemiah, whether it be Daniel, Esther, Mordecai, the examples go on and on and on. I believe we are called to be in politics. And then there is the group that is complicit. This is the group that has drawn the most amount of criticism from me.
Yes.
These are the churches that are bragging that they're still closed.
Mm-hmm.
These are the churches that are telling you you're bad if you open your church.
Right.
These are the churches that are mobilizing their congregation to go march for BLM Incorporated.
Ooh.
These are the churches that are doing live streams around lies about our country, yet remain silent about the 1 million abortions that happen in our country every single year. And these are the churches that I think most of our criticism should be focused at. The complacent churches, the inactive churches. Let's offer them a little grace. Let's say, hey, open your church.
Yeah.
People need you.
Yes.
If you're scared, we can tell you right now
that we know the science around this virus. If you have comorbidities, if you have underlying health conditions, you should take responsibility for your life to take the proper precautions. But do not shut down public gatherings for That's other right. people That's that right. wish to have the liberty to gather.
That's right. I agree. 100%.
And one other thought on this. For the group that is, that they're bragging about how they're working with the government authorities to stay closed. Meanwhile, cannabis dispensaries remain open in this state. Meanwhile, BLM Incorporated can march through the streets unimpeded. The Los Angeles Lakers celebration drew tens of thousands of people in downtown Los Angeles. We learned that this virus cannot spread as long as you're wearing a Lakers jersey. And so these pastors that are complicit, they are not looking at the science correctly. They are seeking public approval from yes. secular politicians that have nothing but contempt for them, and they're cowards. These pastors that keep their churches closed and mobilize their congregations for BLM Incorporated, if they continue to do this, they should resign from their pastoral authority in front of their church. They have no standing to be pastors in our country whatsoever.
Yes. Now, social media. Mm-hmm. I understand. Mark Levin mentioned that your Twitter account got blocked.
It's true.
Yes.
Well, so I tweeted something out on Sunday that was widely reported about mail-in voting. And I tweeted out that 372,000 ballots were rejected in mm-hmm. Pennsylvania. The story later got updated. It said ballot applications. But as I tweeted it, that was what the story said. Yeah. I was living a busy, you know, I did 6 events in California this last weekend. We did Jack Hibbs Church. We were all over the place. And so there's no edit function on Twitter. We all know this. And so Twitter then comes to me and they say, you're locked out of your account. Locked out completely. And I said, I was not trying to mislead my audience. I was just tweeting what was publicly available at the time. And in the typical Twitter totalitarian nature, they put me in a hostage situation. They say, you must delete this tweet if you want to regain access to your 1.85 million followers. And I said, hold on a second. If I don't do exactly what you say you're going to do, the audience that has trusted me with their daily following and that we have earned over the last decade, you are now able to hold that entire audience hostage. And so I said, I'm not going to comply to those demands. Now, mind you, the last couple of days, we've drawn a lot of attention around it. Yeah. And I think we've demonstrated how totalitarian this is.
Yes, for sure.
That if, and by the way, Twitter says we're trying to crack down on misinformation.
Sure.
So, yeah, it's laughable. It really is. Yeah. Because 2 weekends ago, I went to Idaho. And this poor young guy, I took a picture with him. Just a really awesome American patriot. And he happened to look like one of the guys that wanted to kidnap the Michigan governor. And so a series of reporters and journalists then said this guy was the guy behind it. Completely fake, like unbelievably, like pathologically untrue. And I took a picture with this young man. So the journalists, being the activist media members they are, say, oh, Charlie was involved in the plot to go kidnap the Michigan governor. Wow. And so and it was 200,000 retweets covered by every news. Those tweets are still up. To this day, I'm getting people that are emailing me, why are you trying to kidnap my governor? I assure you, I am not trying to kidnap the Michigan governor. Now, but that just goes to show what we're dealing with here, right? So that misinformation, despite me appealing to Twitter, stands that is accusing me of being involved in the plot to kidnap a sitting United States governor.
Wow.
And yet I get one word that was missing from other people's reporting. And so what was going to be happening is we're probably going to have to end up bending the knee. But I think we made the argument. I think we showed how totalitarian, how dangerous this is. I probably will have to do so reluctantly. As much as I would like to stand against Twitter, if I'm pragmatic about it, we're 13 days from an election. We reach millions of people on my Twitter account every single day. I think we're a needed voice right now. So yes, I'll probably end up doing it. I will not do it happily. I will not do it willingly. I will do it in some ways begrudgingly. So probably tomorrow we're going to make a video about this and our Twitter account will be back up, but it won't be because Twitter all of a sudden relented. It will be because the only negotiating tactic they have is a metaphorical gun to my audience's head saying, you do what we tell you to do, and then you can regain your audience. I hope you guys all understand, and you do, that these tech companies have way too much power. We have two governments in our country, and this is a hard realization for conservatives to understand. We have the federal government, which of course has the IRS, DOJ, FBI, and we should be very skeptical of them. We as conservatives naturally are. But we have a second government in our country, and we have no rights of redress against these governments. and these are the tech companies. They're more powerful than our federal government. I can prove it to you. Today, the Department of Justice rightly said they are going to bring an antitrust violation against Google. That is the right thing to do. What happens to Google's share price? It goes up 3% today. So what do investors basically believe? Yeah, go ahead, try. Google's more powerful than your lawsuit.
Wow.
Google's more powerful than the DOJ.
No way.
That should scare all of you.
Yes,
that when the government declares conflict against Google, Google gets more valuable, not less. Who has the power in this country? And if we love liberty and we love freedom of speech, we love our capacity to practice our faith, we should hate centralized power in all form. And it is more rare that that kind of power concentrates in the private sector. But in the digital age, that is actually what has ended up happening. Computer processing, artificial intelligence. It's long past time that we recognize that there are two power sources in this country. They're thousands of miles away. But I can make the argument that Google's even more creepy and even more powerful and even more dangerous. Because even if right now the FBI walked through this door and they arrested me, I could countersue my government. I'm allowed a lawyer. I'm allowed a jury. Now, mind you, they could blur the lines on that, but there are so many different ways that we could still have some form of representative justice. What's my right of recourse against Twitter? Do what they tell me to do. There is no Bill of Rights. There is no representation. There's no way to sue them. We gave them Section 230, the Communications Decency Act, so it's impossible to sue them. And so what we have is multi-trillion dollar companies that have more authority, more data, more processing power, worse ideas than the entire government. They work harder. We have to get very serious that power centers, when they are centralized, are a threat to our natural God-given liberties. In my opinion, long past time to break them up and hold these companies accountable.
Yeah. I agree.
I want to tell you guys about Good Ranchers. It's amazing. Connor here, Charlie Kirk Show. He is raving about Good Ranchers. He says the marbled meats, the texture, the flavor, the depth, the juiciness. He has not stopped talking about Good Ranchers meat. We've been talking about it. We said, okay, give us some of that Good Ranchers meat. Boom! 10 out of 10. That's right. He's smiling. It's true. Go to goodranchers.com right now. And they began with the standard of bringing top quality meat. That's what they're all about. T-bones, fillets, chicken, you name it. If you're responsible for dinner, it's goodranchers.com. Tell them our show sent you. Even better, if you need a T-bone right now, goodranchers.com, promo code Charlie. Goodranchers.com, American meat the way it should be. Good Ranchers is the place to be. But guess what? You don't have to go anywhere because they deliver to your door. So it's goodranchers.com, promo code Charlie. Goodranchers.com, get the meat you need. Juicy, sizzle it, mouth-watering, titillating, awesome meat. GoodRanchers.com, promo code Charlie.
I believe, and I mentioned this when I opened up, I believe we're on the brink of socialism. And I want to get your thoughts on that regarding socialism, the way we're headed here as a country. I believe it's so important that we go out and vote. But why don't we just talk about, if you can, socialism?
Yeah, so I think that that's where we're headed. I think the intermediary step, though, is a lot less clear, and I don't think we do a good enough job of talking about it, and I wouldn't have said this a couple years ago. And I think you're starting to see this in California, that I think that there's enough barriers within our judicial system and within the apprehension of the American populace to prevent against socialism. I think we're actually going to head more towards a corporatist model first, where it's not a matter that they're going to nationalize everything. It's that the Democrat Party is instead going to make friends with the top companies and the top power sources to protect their own interests. And that's the first step. So I think when we warn against socialism, I think that's a really important educational piece. Mm-hmm. But I think because of the wealth and the abundance and the liberty that we're afforded to by that document they wish to shred, the Bill of Rights, mm-hmm. I think that they've looked and I think they finally solved the problem, they being the left, the Democrats, to find a bridge. I think that bridge is they are going to extort, they are going to take over the wealthiest, most powerful companies in our country for their own benefit. And this is something we don't talk about enough, where we just say it's going to go straight from capitalism to socialism. And we kind of know what socialism is. It's horrible, right? I mean, it's immoral, it's unbiblical, happy to build that out. But I think the actually more turbulent transitional phase is, why is it that the tech companies are doing the bidding of the Democrat Party right now? Mm-hmm. Like, why is it that these multi-trillion dollar companies are not aligned the distribution of the Hunter Biden story? That's not socialism. That's a kleptocratic fascist model, actually. It's everything they say that we are, they're actually doing. I think that's a lesson that mm-hmm. we've learned the last couple of years. And so I actually don't think that their first push is going to be for socialism. I think their first push is going to be having national government mandates with certain exclusions. I think that they are going to cut out exceptions for the companies and for the churches that they like. I think we make a mistake. I think we say they're going to shut down the church. I don't think that's right. I think they're going to shut down the churches they don't like. Yeah. Right. I think that they're going to keep certain churches like Joseph Stalin did and say, no, I have the church open. Yeah. Meanwhile, they say, show me your sermons, take a knee. Mm-hmm. So I think we make a mistake when we represent that, because I think that, first of all, people don't always believe us, and I actually don't think it's actually going to happen anytime soon. But I do think that they'll try to shut down a church like this. Mm-hmm. And they're going to use the other churches against you.
Oh, yeah.
Because the body is not united on this issue. That's the thing, is that certain churches have said, no, I want to work with the government. I'm cool with the tyrants. They take care of me. They're going to look out for me. But it's the rebellious, loud, rambunctious churches that will be audited and shut down. So I think that nuance is really important. Because when we say, when Kamala Harris takes the presidency, which is effectively will happen if Joe Biden gets the amount of votes, she will become president regardless of what they say. She's going to take the California model, which is that either you're on my team or their team. And this is a way more corrupt way to run the government than what Bernie Sanders is advocating, right? So Bernie Sanders, he's incredibly foolish, albeit consistent. He wants the nationalization of all industry. Kamala Harris doesn't want that. She wants the nationalization of industries except the ones that benefit her, so that you'll have less banks, but they'll be more centralized. You'll have less telecom companies, but they'll be more centralized. You have less tech companies, you have less transportation companies, less food companies, you get the point. Mm-hmm. It's not as if they'll immediately end private enterprise as we know it. I don't think that's realistic. Instead, I think that they're going to be in a very unprecedented corporatist model, mm-hmm. where they will use the powers of the IRS, the Bureau, to not audit, to not investigate the companies that contribute to their political campaigns, that will not go after the churches that don't speak out against their orders. So I think that's going to be the actual divide in the country, is the people that align with the most powerful people in our country and those that dare to disagree. I think people say we're divided, and I think they say right versus left. I actually don't think that's a divide in our country. I think there's three or four other divides in addition to that. But the one is, do you think that the ruling class and the power class in this country should go completely unchecked? That's basically the position of the Democrat Party. The position of the Democrat Party now is, you cannot question us, and if you do, we will ruin your life.
Right.
And by the way, they always used to be for the speech of the minority and the individual, right? That we want marginalized groups to be able to speak. No, you don't. You want power. You use that as an excuse to get people's votes so that you can be important.
Right. Yeah.
And now we are the ones that are actually publishing stories and pursuing ideas to challenge the most powerful, wealthiest, elite people in our country. And they're the ones using the power sources to go against us. And I can prove it to you. The wealthiest people in this country are donating to Joe Biden, by far.
Yeah.
It's not even close. The wealthiest counties will all vote for Joe Biden. 10 out of 10 will vote for Joe Biden. 10 out of 10 voted for Hillary Clinton. 90 out of 100 voted for Hillary in 2016. The wealthiest counties, the wealthiest people. Bloomberg, who's worth $79 billion, is spending $2 million a day to get Joe Biden elected. Yet they call us the billionaire class. 80% of American billionaires that are participating in politics are donating to the Democrat Party or donating to Democrat super PACs. And so there all of a sudden you have this convergence where we as Republicans, we didn't really ask for it, but or Republicans, conservatives, whatever you want to call it, because I don't even know what a Republican means anymore. How about an American, right? We kind of we've fallen back into this position where we're defending very basic American values. I don't know, to be able to spread a story that has now been corroborated and verified after a week of a political opponent's international business dealings. Mm-hmm. Like, that should be a very basic, agreeable thing, regardless of your political affiliation, whether you're a socialist or a leftist or a moderate or a Republican. And so what's really happening here is the power-grabbing industry in our country, which is what I call the left, they're power grabbers. They want power at every single turn. We're not going to transition to socialism immediately. That's where it eventually will head, absolutely. Because eventually, then, this is what's so incredibly ironic about all these companies and all these churches that think they can make friends with the government. They will come to you. They'll just eat you last. They will absolutely eventually nationalize your industry. They'll eventually shut down your church. You might have a couple Christmases where you don't get bothered, but just wait. Eventually, the totalitarians, they know no bounds. If you know one thing about totalitarians, they do not stop. They're incredibly bored people at times.
Yeah.
No, seriously, they find meaning in destroying and silencing and suppressing opposition opinions. And so I think we have to be very clear about kind of where we're headed in our country.
Great.
Part of
great
it is socialism.
Good answer. I'd like to talk to you about voting for President Trump. Christians, okay. Why would a Christian, okay, not just everybody, but why would a Christian vote for President Trump?
It's a great question. I get it quite often. So I'll kind of go backwards. First of all, why should Christians care about politics? How many times have you heard Christians should stay out of politics? You've heard that all the time. That's an unbiblical view. It's that simple.
That's
all
right.
Throughout the Bible, there
right.
are people of God that influence secular government. I mentioned a couple, Esther, Mordecai, Daniel, Jeremiah, Nehemiah. The list is not exhaustive. And they're looked favorably throughout the scriptures, people that wish to influence government. It says in Jeremiah, pray and work for the welfare of the nation of which you are in. Jesus Christ said clearly when he went up to Caesarea Philippi, he said, on this rock, and usually people say, church, on this rock, build my, it's ecclesia, it's a different term. Let's be clear about what that term actually is. Jesus did not say, on this rock, build my synagogue.
Right.
He did not say, on this rock, build my temple. He used a secular Greek term. We know this thanks to Tyndale, who translated the original Greek Bible into English, which was the language of the peasants in the 1500s. Ecclesia was a real thing that was happening in Greek city-states. Mm-hmm. And ecclesia was a political civic gathering that existed around two unifying Greek terms, isonomia and eleutheria, which are Greek terms for freedom and equality. I wonder what country is founded on freedom and equality. Jesus picked that term because he did not want compartmentalized Christianity. He wanted comprehensive Christianity. He wanted a church that would not wall itself off and say, we have the answers, but we're going to stop here. Instead, I believe it is our biblical mandate to get into civic government,
yes.
to care about the nation that you're living in,
yes.
to support your politicians,
yes.
to pray for them,
yeah.
and to, with reason and with wisdom, analyze what policies best interlock with a biblical worldview. So that's why we should care
Absolutely.
About politics. And I never again want to hear a pastor say that, well, politics is messy. And I say, the church isn't. Anything that human beings are involved in is messy. Well, it doesn't matter. They're all the same. How about King Nero and Diocletian that killed tens of thousands of Christians at the stake. Martyrdom as far as the eye can see. Bad politics give you Mao Zedong, Pol Pot, mm-hmm. Joseph Stalin, and Benito Mussolini. Bad politics has resulted in the human carnage in the last 100 years of 100 million innocent people dead. We are told to look after the innocent as Christians. So you don't get into politics, somebody else will, and they will not share your worldview. So what should we do about that then? Let's also say, so I think I'm clear that we should get into politics, and I'm
yes.
sure most of you agree.
Yes.
Well, then what kind of country do we live in? Well, first of all, we live in the greatest country ever to exist in the history of the world. It's just that simple. It's a country that was founded on freedom, not slavery. One of the sickest lies we teach our children is that this country was founded on slavery.
No.
The abolition of bringing slaves into this country was in the first draft of the United States Constitution, signed by a slave owner himself, Thomas Jefferson, the third American president in 1807. We were the ones that were stopping slavery. Slavery was the human norm before America, and guess what? There are more slaves on the planet today than there were back in the times we had slaves in our country. So before we get on our moral high horse and act as if we have abolished all slavery in all places, go to the Horn of Africa and the Middle East, where slavery still exists, and slavery still exists in the southern border. So before we act as if we were like, oh, we've completely eradicated it from the planet, that is not true. But we did it in America. Why? It's because this country was founded by Christians. 51 out of 55 of the signers of the Declaration were Bible-believing, regular church-attending Christians. It mentions God four times in the Declaration of Independence, laws of nature and nature's God. The recognition that rights come from God, not from government. The United States Constitution, not some sort of mistake, but they didn't fall backwards into it. It was a multi-year, multi-century study of human behavior, where they came up with an idea of constitutional republic, where if you concentrate power too much, that power will corrupt. They derive from Montesquieu, checks and balances. Let's try to decentralize it. Albeit clumsy at times, imperfect, America's story is one of a hero.
Yes.
That starts from a position of plenty of flaws, but its capacity to autocorrect is nothing short of miraculous. And we don't teach this to our children. You start with slavery. You fight a bitter civil war to end it. You keep the Union together. You double life expectancy. You fight two world wars, the second of which defeated totalitarian fascism in two different continents. You put a man in the moon. You get in flight. You invent open heart surgery. Create medical cures that the greatest imagination could never possibly have imagined. And then we get to a place where we have so much abundance and so much liberty, and we remove Bible and public prayer from our schools, all of a sudden that liberty and that abundance becomes a vice, not a blessing. And that's exactly where we are today. Because if you have abundance without the moral law backing it up, if you have a lot of stuff, you can order anything at any time in that supercomputer, you can look up any image you want at any single time, sin has never been so easy as it is in 2020. And if you don't have the law, you don't have the Bible, eventually and quickly, you're going to end into chaos. That's where we are. And not all times are created equal in our country's history. We act as if every election is made the same. That's nonsense. This election is far more important than any in my lifetime, yeah, and probably the most important in well over 100 years. And so we want the welfare. We want what's best. We want to make it mesh with a biblical worldview. So what do we do? Well, let's go back to some of those examples that were counselor to kings. Mordecai, Esther, Joseph. They wanted to influence secular government, and they wanted what was best for God's wishes and God's law. Hmm. And I want what's best for America, because it is a gift that God gave us.
Yep,
well, who has done more to advance what we care about as Bible-believing Christians? How about the most pro-life president in American history? How about the most... A lot of Christians talk a good game about life. A lot of Christians talk about life. It's the one thing that pastors will sometimes do from the pulpits. But how about with the same sort of vocal support you have for life, voice the support for the president who spoke at the March for Life, the first president
That's right.
to do so,
That's right.
who gave us Gorsuch, Kavanaugh, and God willing, Amy Coney Barrett on the United States Supreme Court. Federal judges, finally putting into question Planned Parenthood's $500 million taxpayer-funded slush fund every single year, unafraid to recognize when life begins. And albeit I understand it could be hard for certain people that the three times married, twice divorced, former cover of Playboy magazine billionaire from New York who donated to Planned Parenthood is all of a sudden fighting for unborn children. But isn't it like God to sometimes confuse the simple minds of man to be able to deliver for his purpose?
Yeah.
It makes perfect sense for those of us that
Absolutely.
Believe in what I think God is trying to accomplish in this country and in the world. Most pro-Israel president in American history. Move the embassy to Jerusalem. Recognize Golan Heights. Cancel the Iran deal. Negotiating peace between Israel and the United Arab Emirates, of which the entire activist media is participating in a total blackout,
yeah.
not even covering
yeah. Yeah.
the peace deals that
yeah.
have been negotiated.
Amazing. Amazing.
President Donald Trump allows himself to be prayed over every single day. He is vice president of a Bible-believing, loyal Christian in Mike Pence. Mm-hmm. And Donald Trump, let's be very clear. I could go through his economic, his police record, crime and safety. I could go through the whole thing. I wrote a whole book on it, so I won't spend all my time speaking about it tonight. But let's be very clear about the type of president we want, because not all times are created equal. We're in fighting times right now. You didn't ask for it. You might not want it, but that's what it is. And God tells us in Ecclesiastes, there's a season for everything. The unrecognition that, oh, today's like it was in 1995, you're a fool. The temperature has been raised. The stakes are higher. And I want someone who knows how to fight. And most importantly, someone who knows how to win.
Yeah.
And the very shaky moral pietism coming from some pews across the country, where they're saying Donald Trump's an awful person, I can never vote for him. Meanwhile, he's saving unborn lives, securing our borders, moving the embassy, holding Iran in check. First of all, I wish one day I can be as good of a human being as that critic of Donald Trump. Secondly, Donald Trump has done far more than even self-professed Christians have done in the office of the President of the United States for the biblical worldview. And so we should, as Christians, care about the welfare of our country.
Absolutely.
We should care about the betterment of our civilization.
Absolutely.
And President Donald Trump has gone out of his way to do something that people in Washington, D.C. are not supposed to do. The reason they hate him so much, the reason that their hatred has only intensified, is he broke the first commandment of Washington, D.C. politics, which is he actually has been doing what he said he was going to do. And I'm sure there's people out there, I don't like the tweets, I don't like he does this, I don't like all of that. However, fulfilling of promises and playing offense against an opposition activist media that is nothing but malevolence and contempt is such a moral good for Western civilization. Focusing on tweets and him screaming at reporters is such a distraction issue. I have no patience for that whatsoever. Let me be very clear.
If you guys are listening to this program and you're not listening on good earbuds, I got a solution. The whole Charlie Kirk team, they wear Raycons. Raycon. They're wearing them right now. They're wearing them when they sleep. They're wearing them when they work out. They're wearing them when they're running. They're wearing them when they're editing. That's because the new everyday E25 earbuds are the best ones yet. 6 hours of playtime, seamless Bluetooth pairing, more bass, a more compact design, noise isolating fit. The company was co-founded by a bunch of people that I don't like mentioning anymore because they're not very good people. But anyway, it's a good product. Give them a try. Raycon has a 45-day free return policy, so you can make sure the wireless earbuds are for you. For a limited time, get 15% off your order at buyraycon.com/Kirk. That's buyraycon.com/Kirk for a special 15% discount on Raycon wireless earbuds. Make sure to check it out now while the deal is still running. Buyraycon.com/Kirk.
We also have to be clear as what kind of president do we want? What do the times necessitate? Some people say, well, we need a healer. I don't think we do. We're not out of war yet. As I said, the Bible tells us season for everything. We are in a struggle right now. That's why I said in my RNC speech, and I wasn't sure what part of this phrase bothered the media so much, I could guess, when I called the president the bodyguard of Western civilization. Right? So the great Tito Ortiz is here. Tito, stand up. Amazing. I would hire Tito in a heartbeat to be my bodyguard. There we go. Tito's tough. He gets it, and he knows how to fight. He knows how to win. Guess what? I don't care about Tito's tweet history. I don't care about Tito's what he said to some journalist. When I hire a bodyguard, I want someone who's tough, who's fought before, and who's going to defend what I care about, my family, and my country. And so, and that's what I look for right now in a president. Not the rollover and surrender caucus, not the make excuses type candidate, but the guy that might be a little rough around the edges, but when there's a battle, you want that guy in your corner. And that is President Donald Trump.
Awesome.
Okay, lighten it up a little bit with the debate commission. Check this out. The debate commission's allowing the mute button to be used in the next presidential debate. And you said something. Listen to this. Listen to what he has to say.
I don't love the intention. I don't. I did a whole podcast on this morning. I think it is an unintended consequence. I think this could really hurt Joe Biden. I do not think Joe Biden has the physical capacity to continuously make 2-minute uninterrupted arguments. I don't. And so while I would love Trump to have the ability to cross-examine him, I do know a lot of people that in the first debate were turned off by Trump's interruption, and I did offer that feedback to him. And while I think that muting the microphone is childish and immature and ridiculously insulting, I think that now that that's off the table, Joe Biden is going to have to meander into a place he's never gone, which is the 90-second-plus mark of having to make an argument. And those of us that have sadly dealt with people that have struggled with mental decline, when you keep interrupting, there's a shot of adrenaline that almost affords them the opportunity to look sentient for that 15 to 20 second burst. Right. Mr. Joe, tell me why we should elect you. Go. And when you hit that 100 second mark, it's... You guys have the laptop when you have too many browser windows open. It's when the computer starts to overheat. And it's like you have to start closing windows, right? That's Joe Biden at like 100 seconds, right? You're like, you got to restart the computer. You got to close it. He just can't. That dog will not hunt. And so I think that as an unintended consequence, it could be an incredible blessing for the president. And I look forward to it. I really do.
Okay.
So.
Good answer. Good answer. I'm curious. You know, the president's your friend. And how is he off camera? How is he? Do you get time to spend with him?
He's phenomenal.
What is he like? I'm curious.
The media depiction and representation of this man is so incredibly immoral and dishonest. It is one of the greatest injustices I think have ever been done towards any sort of leader. I mean, I meet people and I meet them on campus, and they actually they really believe this, that Donald Trump is morally and is similarly to a 20th century style dictator from Europe. I mean, they actually believe this. Mm. And the activist media is completely to blame for this. And so the reason why I wrote this book, and again, we're gonna give away books, I'm not here to sell them, is the reason I wrote it. And praise God, it did really well. And actually, I'm really happy. It made New York Times bestseller, which was just so awesome. Yeah. Having to publish it was so good. So, and the reason I wrote it is I had the opportunity to spend time with him. And I realized he asks more questions than he tells me anything. He treats me as a subject matter expert. I saw deeper into his philosophy than any of these other apparatchiks on the media. And I said, wait a second. You are being paid to go on television to write books and write articles about a man's motivations and intentions who you've never spent any time with. I said, I actually have. And so that's why I'm going to articulate what he believes and why he believes it. And it's the complete polar opposite as to what you might believe the activist media says. For example, they say he only cares about himself. He's a complete and total narcissist. Go spend time with him. I've been with him when people come that would just be delivering food for lunch, and he treats that person. He says, tell me what you see on the ground. He's like, excuse me? Tell me what you're hearing. And this guy's like, I don't know what to tell you, Mr. President. What's the number one issue in your neighborhood? And out of nowhere, it's not the political pundit. It's the server who's just bringing a Diet Coke or bringing a tray of food.
That's great.
I learned from him a very important biblical principle, and he embodies it better than any other U.S. senator or congressman I've ever met, was that everyone you meet has a treasure trove of wisdom that you need and you should try to glean from them. And this is something that anyone who has spent time with him has the same sort of response, that he wants to know something that you have in your mind, in what you're thinking, that could help him, benefit him, and make him a better person. This is exactly why he won in 2016. This is exactly why he was able to understand the tone of the Republican Party in the country better than all the people talking on TV. It's because he actually talked to human beings for 40 years.
Yeah.
Is that he walked job sites. He looked carpenters in the eye. He looked HVAC contractors. He looked architects. He looked regular people, and he said, what are you thinking? What are you doing? They're like, well, I wish I didn't have to buy all my products from China. And when he just hears these things and he internalizes them. And then he turns it into public policy, which is the exact opposite to what all your leaders have done for the last 40 years. They basically say, you're stupid, I'm smart, I'm going to go listen to the Stanford and the Harvard people while I make you poor and myself richer. And President Trump's like, no, there's more wisdom in the American plumbing community than in Harvard. And true. And he's embodied that so well. And I'll say this, he's an incredibly loyal person. More so than any other person. I did not ask it. I did not ask for it. I did not call him or any of this. But I get banned on Twitter, and three times he stands up for me yesterday saying, this is outrageous. This is wrong. A couple senators said something. Most didn't. And I didn't ask for it. I'm not trying to play victim or anything. But there's something special about that kind of a guy who defends anyone who's attacked against a power source. And that tells you a lot about the type of president that he is. A lot.
Awesome. I just read Justice John Robertson. He's siding with the three liberals
to permit Pennsylvania to
have the ballots 3 days after the election. And it's just, to me, I don't get it. So what are your thoughts?
Well, that's not even the worst decision that John Roberts has made recently.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
John Roberts, who's a George W. Bush appointee.
Yes.
George W. Bush was a Christian, right? So for these pastors that are like, oh, I can't vote for Trump because he's a Christian. Well, who was it, the Bush appointees or the Trump appointees that ruled in favor of Calvary Chapel, Las Vegas, mm-hmm. when they sued and the Supreme Court came down and John Roberts broke the tie when Ginsburg was still alive back over the summer? And John Roberts said, no, church is not essential, but Caesar's Palace is.
Right. Yeah.
That's John Roberts. Yeah. So for any Christian out there that's like, I can't put my name behind Trump, I can't do it. Hold on a second. You put your name behind Bush probably, and you got a closed church in Vegas. Well, your church is probably closed too, but anyway. But you got a forcibly closed church in Vegas, but an open Caesar's Palace. Neil Gorsuch, Trump appointee, and Brett Kavanaugh co-signed a dissent that is one of the most scathing dissents you'll ever see from the high court. They said this is one of the most unconstitutional, egregious rulings.
I agree.
That you value gaming and gambling over the free expression explicitly said in the First Amendment. And so John Roberts is no surprise. We now know he's probably compromised. He's probably bought and paid for by something. I don't know. We can conjecture into that. But he's a Bush appointee. And so now we're about to have Amy Coney Barrett, which is awesome. And we have Kavanaugh, Gorsuch, ACB, three in the first term, from the man that most of the Christian intelligentsia has told us don't support Trump, even though he has given us three judges that stand for the practice of faith and an originalist interpretation. I actually think there's a really interesting, deeper point here for Christians to be able to learn. So I believe in the inerrancy of Scripture. It is a Calvary Chapel belief.
Absolutely.
I believe that the Word of God is divinely inspired.
Absolutely.
And so I believe that words have meaning. I believe that you can wish all you want, but you cannot move words to fit your own worldview. It is the words as they are written. That's no difference than Kavanaugh, Gorsuch, Amy Coney Barrett to how they view the United States Constitution. They don't get to all of a sudden change the words to fit their own political viewpoint.
Exactly.
They say, this is what the law says, and here's how it should be applied. That is the idea of a textualist or an originalist or constitutionalist justice. And one of the things that you're seeing is that President Donald Trump, one of the biggest home runs that he has done is on the judges' front. Soon to be 300 circuit court judges. The Ninth Circuit that we're in right now has been completely flipped on its head. Three on the U.S. Supreme Court. And if there is no other reason, and I encourage all of you to please communicate this to every Bible-believing Christian and every person of faith, I beg you, because they'll trust you, and that's the most effective form of contact, is you going to a person who trusts you and you say, you cannot argue with this judicial record. You might not like the tweets and you might not like all this, but look at what he's done for the high court in this country. Look what he has done to be able to repeal Roe versus Wade, yeah. which was an unconstitutional, immoral decision done that nationalized abortion that has resulted in 61 million abortions in our country. And so it's President Trump that did that. And this is so incredible that if Hillary Clinton would have won that election, she would have had three justices. The court would have been made in a liberal image for the rest of your life.
Wow.
300 federal courts, and I do not say this lightly, I don't know how we would have recovered from that. And if Trump loses in a couple weeks, which I pray he won't, and we'll dive into that because there's evidence to show he'll win and evidence to show that he's in trouble, we'll go through all of that. But if he wouldn't have won in 16 and he wouldn't have been granted these 4 years, look at what we would not have been able to have up to this point. Because if Joe Biden wins, at least you have five constitutional justices that can strike down anything he tries to do. At the very and President Donald Trump deserves enormous credit for that. And so John Roberts is no surprise there. But it's incredible how the courts have now been remade in a constitutional image. And I'll finish with this on that question. The great Antonin Scalia was asked in 2011 by Peter Robinson from the Hoover Institution, phenomenal organization, great YouTube content. He said, are you optimistic about the future of the courts? And Antonin Scalia, the great Antonin Scalia, Reagan appointed, he said, that's an unfair question. It's impossible to be optimistic after the last session where I dissented in all six cases. 9 years ago, everybody, we were in the depths of despair that our courts were lost for a generation. And 9 years later, thanks to a billionaire from New York who decided to disrupt all of American politics, he's done more so that you can continue to gather as a church, that we can protect the life of the innocent, that you can have your weapons, the Second Amendment, than any other president in our lifetime.
I know you talk a lot about universities, colleges, kids going to universities, how liberal. I'm sure there's people here that may not have heard your take on this. So can you touch on that a little bit?
I first want to say, any Turning Point USA leaders, raise your hand. I want to thank you guys. You guys are doing unbelievable work for our country. It's incredible. Thank you. If you want to see courage, courage is lacking in our country so greatly. I think it is the hardest to find trait of all the traits. I really do. And without courage, you can't have truth, especially in the times that we're in. It's a very important thing to talk about. These are the most courageous people on the planet. They go to university campuses, and instead of obeying the dogmatic decrees or high schools, high school, Pacifica, right? Pacifica High School, Turning Point Chapter right here. They say, I'm going to think differently, I'm going to be proud about it, and I'm going to organize around it. And so Turning Point USA, we're the nation's largest organization that's fighting for American exceptionalism and freedom of thought. We're on over 2,000 high school and college campuses across the country. It's a truly amazing thing, so thank you. And it truly is the hand of God on what we have been able to do. I absolutely believe that. And we are a secular organization, and we are intentionally that. We chartered it, and I believe that our effectiveness is actually in the capacity of teaching a morally centered constitutional government. And then also through that, once people start drinking from the streams of liberty, they're going to want to find its source, which is, of course, God. Liberty is not man's idea. It's God's idea. However, university campuses. Do I have permission to be blunt?
It's blunt as you want.
And I mean no offense through any of this to anyone, but everything I say is rooted in truth and rooted in trying to create a better country. You guys know that. We have made an unbelievable mistake with college in our country. Unbelievable. We need to stop it, we need to admit the mistake, and we have to reverse course. We have way too many kids going to college in our country. Way too many kids. College is ruining our country. It's not benefiting our country. We have a generation of young people that is borrowing money they don't have to study things that don't matter to find jobs that don't exist. Any preconception that you have of the academy or the university, throw out. What education should be, and I support, is around a junior or senior in high school, you start to introduce to a young person's mind the idea that truth and goodness might exist. You start to get them on a journey of reading really good books. You start to challenge them to go find truth in the world and see where it lines up with those books. You take them on that journey, and that's what higher education is supposed to be, everybody. It's supposed to be the ever-persistent pursuit of truth. That's why, literally at Harvard, in their logo, it says Veritas, truth. Now, certain universities proclaim truth, but almost every university should at least tempt people or at least try to interest people to say, let's try and find this together. And maybe you'll find it, maybe you won't. But that's why you want to read the classics in Socrates and Plato and Aristotle, Cicero, Augustine, Aquinas, and Burke, and Hume, and Smith. That's why you're supposed to read this literature and dive deep into it. The university has done the exact opposite, and it is one of the great moral injustices done to Western civilization. The university takes a young junior or senior in high school or even younger, and they say truth does not exist. Yeah. Don't even try looking for it. In fact, we live in such a broken, oppressed, awful world. You're a victim. I'm going to train you how to complain about it. What that does to the maturity process of a young person is so incredibly, I'm going to use this word intentionally, abusive. To teach evangelistic nihilism is one of the greatest moral injustices you can do to young people. Now, I'm not saying you shouldn't say that the nihilistic school of thought exists. But when it is, which is a belief in nothingness, and there's plenty of writers that engage in that. However, it is not just the predominant, it is the only viewpoint that is expressed by the American Academy now, where it creates incredibly ungrateful, unhappy, and highly motivated people to destroy the world around them. And instead of trying to create stronger young people to be able to have a burden to go into the world, not have a burden, be able to have stronger shoulders, I should say, to endure the burden that is life, which we all know exists. Instead, we tell young people, any challenges you're going to encounter, it's not your fault, it's somebody else's fault. So we went from a Western style of education that said, America is pretty good and you're the problem. Now we say you're pretty good and America's the problem. So what does that mean for your civilization? Because we keep on sending these kids to these universities, and parents out there, I love you to death. You got to stop doing this. Seriously. The country will crumble in a decade, and talk to our young Turning Point leaders. They'll tell you it's worse than you can imagine. And they are training activists to deconstruct our society. And by the way, that would be bad enough. But maybe they're getting a skill. They're not even getting a skill. Only 59% of kids that go to college graduate. 41% drop out. Out of those that graduate, 44% are employed in minimum wage jobs. They're not even using anything they learned to apply it to the market. So it'd be one thing if they were getting skills and they were doing this and they were learning all these bad nihilistic ideas. It's worse. They're filled with these bad ideas. They have a depleted and totally diminished worldview, and they have no skill or application into the marketplace. Don't be surprised when those people start to burn down your country, because they are. And so the question, and then it's even worse than that. It's a level deeper. It is. It's even worse. Because when you send your kid to college, you're playing Russian roulette with their values. And there's 5 out of 6 bullets that are loaded. Because there is a high chance that you send that kid to college, they will come back unrecognizable. We were interfacing privately about this with some young people.
We see it all the time.
Do not send a Christian kid to college unless they are ready to watch 6 hours of Sam Harris a day and say why he's wrong. Because atheism is very compelling to an untrained young eye. It's incredibly compelling. We have truth that the enemy is very, very clever. And do not convince yourself. They might go through apologetics, they might be raised in the church. In 1 year, they could be turned, and you will never get them back. So what are we doing? I could tell you what we're doing. We're feeding parents' egos across the country is what we're doing. Kids do not want to go to college. They're being forced to go to college. And it's upper middle class parents that think that their kid has to go to college to succeed, and you're wrong. There is no data to support that. Now, if your kid wants to be an engineer, a lawyer, or a doctor, and you can get through college quickly without being indoctrinated, that's the right choice. Less than 10% of kids that go to college have that path. Most kids go to college because they say, my parents made me. It's true.
Yeah.
Why are you sending your kids to school? Because they have to. None of the data supports it. There's more data to support they'll be in debt for the rest of their life and have lower income potential. So what's the reason? The reason, and I'm going to be as blunt as I possibly can, is parents are unprepared to tell their neighbors that their kids are not going to college. That's why. And so people say, well, what do we do? What do I do with my kids? We need more entrepreneurs, gap years, welders, carpenters, HVAC, police officers, firefighters, people in the military, people that work with their hands. And I recommend this for all people, especially young men. Maybe parents are like, well, I really, because it's so, I have never encountered the most dogmatic thing in America is that my kid has to go to college. It is the hardest thing for me to untrain. It is so unbelievably compulsory. I'm still trying to understand how it happened. Yeah. It's like, I talk to these parents, like, I agree, my kid's still going to school. I'm like, why? Because that's what we do. You're telling me you're going $65,000 into debt to send your kid to go become a communist, to get no to get no skills whatsoever. They might become an atheist too. Why? And if you have a good reason, I'm not saying every kid shouldn't go. I gave the preface, right?
Yeah.
And here's the kicker. We interview 3,000 people a year at Turning Point USA. 3,000. We have 160 people on staff.
Wow.
And sometimes I sit on these job interviews I just did recently. And I love these kids to death. I really do. And I sit down and I say, what's your skill? And they say, well, I went to University of Southern California. I said, what's your skill? Or they say, I went to Stanford. I said, no. What can you do that my high school kids can't do at Turning Point USA? And they said, well, I went to universities. I said, no. What's your skill? And they said, I got political science. I said, we're not interfacing correctly. Like, you have a bunch of debt. You took a bunch of classes. I get that. Like, what can you do that I can't hire an 18-year-old for less for? Now, mind you, when I'm hiring a plumber, the first thing I say is, what's your skill? Well, I can make sure that thing doesn't leak. You're hired. You're great. You can do something I can't do that they can't do. When I hire a computer engineer, 18 months of coding, they come in. We have all these IT needs at Turning Point, right? Incredible. We're on digital media all the time. What's your skill? Well, I can code. Terrific. Great. Just go do that. Right out of high school, I find kids that are excelling in editing, in being able to make videos. And they're like, I have to go to college for video editing. I'm like, why? And they say, well, because everyone says I do. I said, I'll hire you right now for $40,000 a year in Phoenix, a nice wage, to go edit my videos. You're really good. Oh, my parents won't let me. I'm literally giving you a job. And that's the reason why the parents are saying, well, my parents say I have to go to college because I have to get it. I'm giving you a job with health care, and you're 18 and no debt. And you'd be amazed how many parents say, no, this is not cool. My kid's going to college. All the time. And I'm like, I have the jobs open, and I'm telling you, this has to be disrupted right now. It does. If you are not getting a skill, do not go to college. It's that simple. Is that blunt enough?
Very good. I love it. I'm married to a Scottish woman. I love blunt.
Okay.
I love it.
I believe at this time, let's go ahead. Let's take some questions from you guys.
But make security, them pretty short, please.
Make them short.
Snappy, yeah.
For security reasons, this is going to, because we've got to get you on a mic, otherwise we're not going to hear you. So I've got 10 books. This is going to be very interesting, though. Okay, this is what the security is asking me to do, though. If you can go out this door right here, and then go out, and the microphone will be right here. So they'll bring you back to your seat, but you got to make your way.
Turning Point leader should ask a question.
I don't need a microphone.
When will she be locked up?
Hillary? Or never. I'll actually answer that. Thank you, though, okay? So what's your question? I'll answer that question as soon as it gets quiet. See, I got you.
There you go.
We made it ADA accessible. All right, I got two questions. One is, when is Hillary going to prison?
Yes. I love it.
And
your answer was never.
Well, yeah, it was never. Look, I'm incredibly cynical about our justice system, okay? I believe that and John Edwards said this, and he's a horrible guy, but he said it when he was running for president in 2004. He said there's two Americas. He's absolutely right. And there are two justice systems, and I wish it wasn't the case. If you are the son of or connected to a Democrat, you don't go to jail. I wish it wasn't the case. I want to be proven wrong, unless they just want to make a show trial out of you. Will Trump get the 300 electoral votes? He needs 270 to win. I don't know. I see good things. I see troubling things. So I'm actually not going into the prediction business until the day before the election. I made an accurate prediction last year because things are happening in real time. So let me kind of give a call to action for everyone here. You live 4 hours from probably the most important battleground state in the country, which is Arizona.
Yes.
Trump's path to the presidency is nearly impossible without Arizona. I've done the math every which way. It's less than 5% chance. What I would love to see is California patriots getting buses and cars and go knock on tens of thousands of doors in Arizona. Because I'm telling you right now, we need the help. We're headquartered in Arizona.
Wow.
We're getting killed on the ground right now.
Wow.
Early voting is not the way it needs to be. It's good in North Carolina. It's good in Florida. Arizona's a problem. Wow. I'm telling you. And so I know you guys want to save California. That's important. But maybe dedicate one weekend to go there and knock on doors in Lake Havasu, or go knock on doors in Yuma. It's not far from here. It's just right through the desert. You guys know it. And you can go through the Trump Victory Office, whatever you have to do. So Arizona. I do believe Trump will win Arizona because there are more registered Republicans, and we are going so aggressive in Arizona right now. Like, we are going full throttle through Turning Point Action, our political vehicle. Florida, I think Trump wins. I think Trump wins Florida convincingly. I think Trump wins North Carolina, Trump wins Ohio, and Trump wins Iowa. That means he needs one more after that. That is that he wins Georgia and Texas, which he will. He'll win Georgia and Texas. The question is this: can he win one more industrial Midwest state? Either a Minnesota, a Michigan, a Wisconsin, or a Pennsylvania. I believe this entire country will come down to Pennsylvania. I do. Wow. I think it's Pennsylvania and Arizona. I think Florida's good. Florida early voting is phenomenal. Our districts are showing up. Our precincts are great. Very, very happy with what I'm seeing. And that's the thing. You have to understand that as we're getting early voting data, we have to adapt. And I'm telling you that we're getting killed in early voting in Arizona. And usually Republicans win early voting in Arizona. It's one of the few states in the country where Republicans win early voting. So there's been a lot of confusion around mail-in ballots and all that sort of stuff. I don't have to get into that. So Pennsylvania, Arizona. Pennsylvania, I think, is actually the state where Joe Biden's laptop story matters most because it hits home. I actually think that laptop story doesn't really fly in certain other states. I don't. I don't think it does a lot for you in Florida. I don't. I don't think for... I think that in Florida, there's not that many persuaders, all that. I think in Pennsylvania, it has the most left of undecided voters.
Wow.
Of all the remaining states, Pennsylvania. That story really, really resonates. Because a guy that continually portrays himself as a Scranton boy, as Main Street, was really selling out our country intercontinentally via his son. And so will Trump get there? Again, I'm not in the prediction business till the day before because it's still way too early because we're looking at ballots and all this. But here, let me tell you some negatives for Trump. We're getting outspent on television like I've never seen before. And that will make a difference. Now, whether it's a diminishing return at some point remains to be seen, but Bloomberg's spending $2 million a day in Florida. Like, unbelievable numbers, right? Trump is benefiting by voter registration numbers. We crush Democrats in voter registration numbers. And the most black county in Florida had plus 800 Republican voter registrations and 16 Democrats voter registrations in the last 60 days. It's unbelievable. That's a really good thing. And so there's a lot of really interesting, positive, what we would call a deeper level of analysis, political news for Trump, absent the early voting thing in Arizona, which can be corrected, by the way. The election's not over. That's the cool thing, is like you can adapt and you can kind of react to this. So I don't mean to be the bearer of bad news. There's been 19 million guns sold in this country so far this year. I don't think a lot of those people are voting for Joe Biden. I don't. And the more that Joe Biden panders to the, like, he's so incredible. Donald Trump did an amazing thing at his rally tonight. On loop in Pennsylvania, he showed all the footage of Joe Biden saying he was going to ban fracking nonstop. Brilliant. Whoever on the Trump campaign came up with that campaign, because in central Pennsylvania, that's 40,000 people that came to his rally or whatever. I don't know the number. It looked like 30,000, whatever. They're all going to talk about that video that they saw. And the next time fracking comes up, that's like run. That is the best at nonstop. It was just Joe Biden saying he was going to ban fracking. You could not miss it because it's right in the heart of fracking country. And yet he's said it so many times. President Trump will win if, a couple things, there's not widespread mail-in voter fraud. So you got to all be poll watchers. You guys know here in Orange County how that can flip a seat. Yong Kim goes for orientation. It gets flipped. One of the most immoral things I've seen recently. President Trump will win if the tech companies do not launch an unprecedented offensive even more than what they've already done. The tech companies could make this thing go for Biden. They could. They could shut down accounts. They could shut down ads. They could manipulate search results. 5 million people Google the night before the election, who should I vote for? If that doesn't give you a crisis in confidence, I don't know what will. I know we have other questions, but let me just finish by saying this. There's two outcomes. We're on for record voter turnout. There's lines like we can't believe Republicans are doing well in early balloting. Here's the only two outcomes that I see. Republicans and Trump supporters are so excited that we're... this outcome is not the good one. That we're voting... just, you know, we're so excited we're voting early and there will just be kind of a tapering off effect and we're going to lose. That's possible. Or that it's going to be this ever-building crescendo that we're voting early, that's not going to stop. And this thing is going to get wildly out of control for Biden. There's 9% of voters that are undecided. I'm surprised it's that much. Why? If you still haven't made your mind up about Donald Trump, you're like, I don't know. After all the negative coverage, the impeachment, I'm still giving them a chance. They're waiting for a reason to vote for Trump. Typically, when you're trying to beat an incumbent, the late breakers go to the challenger. I think it's the exact opposite this election. I think the late breakers are going to go to the incumbent.
Awesome.
I think that since the arbitrage and deluge of information that the base for Trump is so motivated, I do not think there will be late breakers for Biden. Who are those people? I don't know them. Like, I don't know. Now, finally, I've made up my mind. I think that these are Republicans that have said they don't like Trump's style. I don't like that. But please give me a policy reason to vote for you. That's why I'm barnstorming the country and doing 2 podcasts a day and 2 hours of radio. Here's why. Because it's not a persuasion election. It is an election of turnout. And I just got to get those 9% of people to hold their nose, mark Trump, and save the country. Like, that's it. Thank you for your question. Okay.
All right. There you go. First question.
I'm currently a high school student. And so I was wondering what we should do to try and fix our failing public school system, as well as college students. What should they try to do to fix
their school? It's a great question. Thank you. What year are you in high school?
I'm a senior.
You're a senior. Awesome. Thank you for being here. It is very difficult to be a high school conservative. You all know this. And God bless these young people. So for the adults out here, please go out of your way to bless, defend, and support young conservatives. You could do that through Turning Point USA. You could do that through these local groups. They need your help. And I don't just mean financial help, because they need that too. But they need your reinforcement. They need your prayers. They need your text messages. They need your don't stop fightings, because they are under attack right now. And there are not, I'm going to tell you, we run over 1,000 of these groups across the country. There are not enough adults that are going out of their way to shepherd young people through what they're experiencing. Say, hey, I'm gonna have the Turning Point group over for a home-cooked meal at my house just to tell them they're not alone. Have you guys done that? Start doing that, right? Because they need it. Because they will drop off if this continues. Not our kids, but a lot of them. Our kids are fighters. They are. But a lot of these kids in the middle will be like, screw it, I'm done. Because it is so culturally impossible. I shouldn't say impossible, difficult. To be young conservative. What can we do? We need school choice. We need all those things. We got to take back our school boards, everybody. Run for school board. Support your local government candidates like Tito. Yes. So important. I love that Tito's running for city council. Everyone go knock on doors, get a yard sign, donate to his campaign. I love local government. I think that we as Republicans think that our salvation's coming in Air Force One. Well, we got 900,000 homeless people in Huntington Beach or whatever it is, right? All politics is local. We lost the country because we lost the locals. And the other thing about schooling, we got to double our homeschooling population in our country in the next 5 years.
Yeah, I agree.
And homeschooling has got to get back to how it was in the 1700s. The whole community stepped up. If you guys are retired and you're looking for something to do, try to find a homeschooling family where you can pitch in a couple hours to give the mother a breather. Right? Like, maybe she just needs a couple hours just to decompress. It's hard to be a homeschooling parent. And maybe you're retired and maybe you used to teach history. And you're like, I'm looking for a way God can use me in my local community. Then go find that homeschooling family. And you're like, every Thursday I'm going to come in and we're going to do civics for 90 minutes. The mom can then go, you know, do whatever she needs to do to make her life a little bit easier that day. Because I get emails from thousands of families across the country of homeschooling moms that are like, I might not be able to do this anymore. I don't know if I can do it because it's financially and it is socially, not socially, but it's psychologically and spiritually hard. So that's where I think the body of Christ and the country needs to step up, and we need to help those homeschooling parents because it is a moral good that they are doing.
Awesome.
Yes.
Awesome. Good
answer. All right. Next question.
Next question.
Hey, Charlie, just a real quick question. Pretty simple, but I don't think it gets asked enough.
Okay.
Do you believe in a flat tax? And if so, how would you implement it?
Great question. So thoughtful. You're probably homeschooled. So Yes, I do, ideally. I believe in a biblical tax. I believe 10% across the board, no exceptions, no carve-outs, no loopholes, nothing. It's never going to happen, okay? So we can kind of use it as a nice shot to open up our argument. It's there's so much cronyism, there's so much favoritism, but I like it as a way of how we should actually talk about what taxation should be. And I think that we should use it as a standard of to work from, right? So if that's a good working beginning. But yes, I absolutely believe that taxation should be the same number. And I do believe that every person should pay something in tax. I don't believe there should be any person in a country that pays $0 in tax. I don't. And by the way, they say, oh, the rich pay too much. You guys know the truth. It's working people that end up paying the most of these taxes. Mm-hmm. It's the muscular class. It's the small business. It's the carpenters, the plumbers, the welders, the delivery people. It's the teachers. It is the backbone of our country that end up paying for these pipeline wishes for the ruling class in our country. They don't feel any of this. It's all a rounding error. They don't look at their tax bill. It's all the same. It's you guys that end up paying the taxes for the rich. You pay it for higher prices of goods, sales tax, property tax, you name it. So yes, ideally, but just to be quite honest and concretely, it's not going to happen, I don't think, anytime soon. However, that doesn't mean I have to stop advocating for it. Great question, though. Thank you.
Next question.
Turning point leader.
Yes.
What do you think are key points Trump should make in the next debate?
It's a great question.
Wow.
You know, I've spent a fair amount of time in California, and we're headquartered in Phoenix, and we spent a lot of time here. And my goodness, what these people have done to this state is so incredibly awful and immoral. It's such a beautiful, it's a beautiful state. It really is. And they've destroyed it. They absolutely have. But you know, it's one thing that I've seen that's missing from this state. And maybe you guys can inform me. You have your U.S. Senator running for the vice presidency. I think your state really hates her. And the rest of the country does too. And I think that the president has to play a little bit of a chess game here. The president has to say something that all voters know but hasn't been articulated correctly. And the president should continue to say the Harris administration will do this. The Harris administration will criminalize faith. Sometimes the obvious needs to be said. And I think the president needs to say this in the upcoming debate and say that the Harris administration will pack the courts. This will have a two impact. The first of which, it will horrify decent people. They'll be like, wait, I'm voting for that? Like, where's my ballot? Trump? Like, as soon as I possibly can, right? Because sometimes the obvious needs to be articulated. The second of which, it'll bother Joe Biden a lot. It will. And he should say it at every answer, because it's actually something that even the activist media will not be able to refute. We all know who will be in charge. We know this, right? We know this guy's not going to be running our government, but let's start saying it. Let's start articulating it. So in front of 75 million people, let's start to manifest through words exactly what we're going to be living through. The Harris administration... The Harris administration will keep our borders open. The Harris administration will close the embassy in Jerusalem. The Harris administration will take our guns away, so on and so forth. The other thing I think he needs to do, he needs to handle the Hunter Biden thing correctly. Because he has an opportunity to do this 10 out of 10, and he has an opportunity to really screw this up. Now, I'm going to be honest. This is completely as bluntly as I can say this. If he handles the Hunter Biden thing incorrectly, he could lose the election. Because every situation in polling we do, if you attack Hunter too hard, sympathy votes for Joe and he goes up. So he has to frame it correctly. And we know he's going to mention it. We know the president will go straight in on it. But he has to do it this way. He has to make it not about Hunter, but about Joe.
Yes.
And he has to say, look, Joe, we know that your son's been going through a lot of problems. And actually, we're praying that he actually has some recovery. But this is not about Hunter. Hunter right here is actually the victim. All this stuff on the laptop is about you. This stuff is about what you enabled. These are the meetings that you set up. And you used your son to get rich. And none of this is about Hunter. In fact, I hope Hunter finds healing. I hope he finds reconciliation. And actually, I feel bad for Hunter. Because I feel bad that he had a father like you that paraded him around the entire country. That's how he has to handle it.
Wow.
Because then there, then the psychological brilliance of that is disunity, right? It is making it as if Joe Biden was financially benefiting from, which he was, we know he is, but I think you have to separate the two. The American people do not look fondly on a relentless focus on a person running for office's son. It's not, it's just not popular. And we know that's actually not the whole story. Right. We know Hunter was just doing what his father told him to do. Yeah. That's what needs to be articulated. Okay, next question. We're working on it.
Hi, Mr. Kirk. My question for you is, with America, we face a lot of problems right now, but they're not universalized only within America. What is your stance on Agenda 21 and Agenda 2030?
You're totally right. You're exactly right. Look, there's a globalist agenda behind all of this. And the globalists want the erosion of American sovereignty. They want the imposition of very dark things. I'm going to stop there. You guys can do your own research there. That is, I really believe that we are in a struggle of good versus evil in this. And it's spiritual in nature, by the way. I really believe it is spiritual. The president has done a lot of things that has bothered the ruling class, one of which, as I mentioned, is the reassertion of American sovereignty. The other is the fact that he has challenged these transnational organizations that were, in an unimpeded fashion, destroying the existence of America. Trans-Pacific Partnership, the Paris Climate Accord, are complete and total surrender to the United Nations. And President Donald Trump, through the MAGA doctrine, which I wrote about in my book, is saying, no. America does not take orders from Brussels. We don't take orders from the United Nations. We are self-determiners. We make laws for ourselves. And if you're going to try to put us into some sort of globalist coalition that makes America weaker, that destroys our competitive advantage, and tries to have rules outside of our borders that comes into our country, we're not going to stand for that. And that is also on the ballot, because Joe Biden will put us back into all of those globalist organizations instantaneously. And it's very scary what they want, everybody. The erosion of American sovereignty is one of the greatest threats to everything that you hold near and dear, because our courts will be invalidated by a global tribunal court. It doesn't matter if we'll have the Supreme Court. They'll have some sort of super global court that will come in and say, you can't do certain things, and he'll just hand over the sovereignty. And a lot of our framework doesn't know how to deal with a global unibody. So President Donald Trump is all that stands between American exceptionalism and American sovereignty and some of the darkest, most sinister forces implementing their viewpoint into this country. Just another reason why he must get reelected. Yeah. Thank you for your question. Yeah. Great question.
Next question.
Charlie, good meeting you again. I'm Earl Weber. And on my
He's running for Congress.
Yeah.
And let me say this. I want to say this. I don't know if you'll win or not. You're in a tough district.
Tough one.
But we need to run Republicans in every seat, because even if he only – let's say he loses. I don't know if you lose or not. But if you only lose by 10 points instead of the traditional Republican losing by 40, that helps everyone, and these are people that are exposed. So you should give him a round of applause for running in this side of the district. A very important thing.
Over the past 2 years of running for Congress, I've gone through the district asking people basic questions like, do you know who your congressperson is, your state assembly member, your state senator? 9 out of 10 people can't tell me who their lawmakers are.
Yes, that's right.
But then they vote Democrat down ticket, and then they don't recognize the dangerous legislation that gets passed here on the state level by these people they've enabled, this Democrat supermajority that has been enabled in California. So what can we do, especially in the religious community, to get more people civically engaged and excited learning about our history, learning about civics, and also how important their conservative values are, and voting on those conservative values?
It's terrific.
Subscribing to the leftist ideologies.
So the first thing you can
do. Good question.
And it's terrific. Thank you.
Good question.
and we don't talk about this enough, but I'm starting to see this happen naturally and organically, so let's do more of it. We as conservatives need to learn more. We need to be on fire for knowledge. We have not done a good job of this for 20 years. We haven't. We thought the universities would do this for us, and we've done a poor job. Understand what critical race theory is. Know who Herbert Marcuse is. Know who Michel Foucault is. Jacques Derrida, the Frankfurt School. Dive deep into their literature and our literature, because I can tell you, the more you learn, the deeper you go, that is what will lead us to an awakening in our country. I'm telling you. And so that's the first thing we have to do. Not you getting to other people, you yourself. You'll see things with more clarity. You'll be able to process confusion better. Mm-hmm. So first thing. The second thing is that in the church, we need to have a very serious, boy, how do I word this correctly? We need to have a very serious moment in the church where we decide the church's proper role in the public square. And I encourage all of you that do not currently go to a church that is engaging in politics and talking about politics, give them a moment of grace and then leave that church. It's that simple. The moment of grace should be, please speak up, say it privately to your pastor. We're called to be in politics by Jesus Christ, the ecclesia. There's numerous examples in the Bible of people of, you know, after God's heart, that we're involved in politics, being counselor of the king, and we, the people, are counselor of the king, and the church is the counselor of the king, and the king is the government in this sense. And if you will not get involved in politics, you are disobeying your biblical commandment, and I'm disengaging from your church. Vote with your feet in that way. And then you need to lift up pastors like this that do their job. And so, my friend James Cadiz is backstage from Calvary Chapel, Signal Hill.
Yeah,
there's
awesome.
My pastor.
Jack Hibbs.
My pastor is Pastor Rob McCoy from Thousand Oaks, California.
Pastor Jack Hibbs.
There's phenomenal pastors out there.
Yeah.
So if you're in Southern California, you're like, there's this church, James Cadiz, Jack Hibbs, Rob McCoy. And I just want to take this moment.
Tom Hughes.
And maybe some of you are like, I don't know about this whole religion thing. I don't get this. By the way, first of all, welcome. I mean that. I'm a Bible-believing Christian. I talk about it openly. It's the most important thing in my life. The most important thing you could do in your life is accept Jesus Christ in your life.
No.
And I'm sure all of you know. And just allow me the moment to... I'm sure all of you have experienced that maybe the more I just try to check boxes, I'm not enough. And you're exactly right. That the gospel of Jesus Christ is the only way for human beings to be able to come into relationship with God without checking the proper boxes. Just accepting him in. The gospel in 4 words, 3 words, 2 words, 1 word. 4 words, Jesus took my place. 3 words, him for me. 2 words, substitutionary atonement. 1 word, grace. What is grace? We say it a lot. We don't always articulate it. Let's pretend that you did something bad, because we all do. Sin, distance from God. You're in front of a judge. Let's first go through justice, then mercy, then grace. Justice, you go to jail. Punishment, because you deserve it. Mercy. You go to jail for half the amount of time. Grace. You get sentenced and someone comes up and says, I'm going to do that prison sentence for you. That's what Jesus did for you.
That's
he
right.
served that prison sentence for you.
Right.
So I encourage all of you, if you're confused, there's two things that I ask you guys to do. If you're like, maybe God is talking to me. Maybe I want to do something with religion, but I've had a bad experience. There was a pastor that did something I like. I grew up in a weird church. I don't know. I hear these things all the time. Read 2 books of the Bible. Read Proverbs and the book of John. And do what Proverbs says for a month and see if it improves your life. And read the book of John as if it's a compelling story. And believe it. Entertain in your heart that maybe this is true. Maybe what is written in the book of John is not some mythology. It's not just some sort of narrative. But maybe it actually happened. If you do those two things, I pray that you'll be able to accept Jesus Christ in your life. So anyway, I just want to make sure I got that.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you. Next question.
Hi, Charlie. I recently walked away from the Democratic Party 5 months ago.
So
awesome.
I'm sorry to interrupt you.
No, 5 months.
5 months ago.
5 months ago.
So in 2016, you voted or no?
I did vote. Okay, so I voted for President Trump because my wonderful husband here, he was raised in Oklahoma, and he said, trust me. Just trust me.
But you were still on the left.
But I was still on the left. So thank you. I love you.
Baby. Amazing. So tell me, what made the shift 5 months ago?
The riots.
Wow. Tell us more.
Yes.
I was watching TV and I shed a tear and I said, there is no way you can put anything justice in front of it to basically approve this and make it seem okay. Burning down buildings, assaulting people, hurting people. There is no way. That was a turning point for me. And actually, I want to say that you were one of the first people that I turned to. You are one of my political idols, and it's an honor to be here. You're on my Instagram as one of my political idols, along with Candace Owens, Stephen Crowder, Officer Tatum.
So let me just say,
yes.
I do what I do because of people like you.
Thank
That's right.
you so much.
I do.
Yes.
I do.
That's right.
I travel the country, sometimes sleep 2 hours a night, do 2 podcasts a day, radio shows. We did 6 events in California, praying and hopefully obediently that someone who is not yet of my opinion is listening and will one day believe what we believe. And that's really a message of hope. So I just want to say how touched I am by that.
Thank you.
And thank you. So what's your question?
Yes, of course. Okay. So my question is, do you think California will become Republic again? And what can we do to regain our values? In other words, how can we truly wake up the woke?
So the reason why in the long term, not necessarily the short term, I have hope for all states in our country is people like you.
Yeah.
You were on the left. You were a Democrat. And you moved. We convince ourselves wrongly, and it's a very, very dangerous thing. The way things are is the way they will always be. And the way things will be is determined completely and solely on human action, on you. The fact that we as conservatives are contesting in the state of Minnesota is an amazing thing. It's one of the only states, Minnesota and D.C., that Ronald Reagan lost in 1984. It was considered to be the most liberal state in the entire country. Now Donald Trump's within 2 points of winning it.
Wow.
Things can change. The state used to be Republican and conservative.
Right.
Now it's Democrat.
Yeah.
And with good effort and the right conversions and the right arguments and persistence, why can't the state turn?
That's right.
I see no reason why not. And some people say it's a lost cause. It might be a lost cause for you.
Yeah.
It's not a lost cause for those people that believe that things can move towards truth, which is a biblical Christian idea.
Yeah.
So I don't know when, but I do know how. The how is by more people like you being exposed, being communicated to, and more people like all of you communicating, believing like stories like this can happen.
That's right.
Not being hopeless, not being despondent, dismissing this, everyone around me believes nonsense. Stop it. They might today, but why not tomorrow? Because people can change. That's the Christian story, is a story of conversion. And so for my message to people in California is don't give up on this great state. Start
right.
small, think big.
That's
Get
right.
Tito elected, for
That's
example.
Right.
Right? Win back these state assembly races, win back these congressional races, and incrementally start to notch up wins. For example, the woman that got in all that trouble, Katie Hill, thank you. We won that seat by like 11 points. You're not supposed to be able to do stuff like that. Mike Garcia, right? That's his name, Mike Garcia. Mark Garcia. Mike, I'm sorry. Mike Garcia. That's a great victory. Let's duplicate it. They want a ballot harvest? We'll ballot harvest at our church.
That's what we're doing.
Right? And that's what
we're
doing.
Right here. Yeah.
And so, don't give up hope. As soon as you lose hope, that is when the left truly knows they have won. Their strategy is a strategy, according to Saul Alinsky's Rule for Radicals, Keep the Pressure On, is one of waterboarding cultural submission. They want to keep you under long enough where you say, I give up, I'm never going to survive this. When in reality, we will win. As soon as we give up, they have won everything. So I'm so touched by your story, and thank you
thank
for being
you
here.
Again.
Let's get a picture after, okay? So thank you. Next question.
Hi, Charlie. This is my first time witnessing your works, and you're amazing.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Just recently on Sunday, I went to the Orange County Front Rally. It was my first rally. And the sense of unity for United States, the love, it's just something that was just so amazing to witness. And the biggest thing I noticed was the Armenian community was out there just supporting for Trump. And I mean, it was, they were everywhere. And it was just, and they are just praying. And, you know, I just want to know your insight, if you can provide us a little information on what's going on there. I mean, it's, I know, I don't know if it's like a channel.
No, it's very geopolitically in play right now. To be honest, I don't know that much about the situation, except I have a lot of people trying to call me about it. And I just, you know, there's a little bit more pressing issues. However, I think it's an absolute disgrace that we have not taught and recognized the Armenian genocide in our country. What the Turks did to the Armenian people is so incredibly immoral and awful. So that I will comment on, that it is my position that the Armenian people were targets of any sort of classification of genocide. And any sort of Turkish influence in our country or our government that tries to prevent the history and the teaching of the Armenian genocide is evil. And so I stand with the Armenian people in properly classifying the aggression of the Turkish government back when they were slaughtered as a genocide. And we must recognize it as such. And it's not a little thing. It's a very big thing for a lot of different reasons. I'm not as well versed, quite honestly, what's going on right there, right now. I will do a podcast on that. I've been told by the State Department that the people that are connected to the State Department, they're analyzing it, they're looking at it. But I do know that the Armenian community loves Trump, that his stance for the Armenian community has been amazing. Thank you for your question. I appreciate it. So.
Hi, Charlie. This is Jennifer Sterling, or I'm Jennifer Sterling. I'm the president of the Republicans Women's Federated. Orange County's been super strong here in California. The mask has been a very big deal here. We have 3.2 million people in Orange County. We've lost 1,400 lives. 51% are living. That died were in skilled nursing homes. The average age, 78 years old. Brave patriots to be out here using their rights. I'm one of the first people in the country that was arrested at Mother's Market in Costa Mesa for not wearing a mask.
Wow.
Wow.
I found out Friday night, you guys are all going to be the first to know that Todd Spritzer, our Republican DA, has decided to file charges against me for trespassing.
Yet they don't file charges against the burning and the looting and the rioting, but they go after people like hers.
So my question to you is this. Knowing that the right to a speedy trial has now been compromised in the Supreme Court, we've had judges who have decided that we're not able to offer the speedy trial, 30 days for a felony, 60 for a misdemeanor. Some judges are dropping everything and just letting victims
We got to get to the question. We're running out of time.
What do you think we should do? Should we just settle and say I was wrong for trespassing, or do we fight the fight?
I don't know the specifics of your case. You got a trespassing cause for wearing a mask?
Yes, sir.
That doesn't make a lot of sense.
No.
Oh, for not wearing a mask. A trespassing cause. Look, here's my general rule, and I don't know the specifics of your case, and I'm not a lawyer. However, if you don't fight the little fights, they will manifest into big tyranny. Problems that are not confronted multiply. That's my general rule. Problems that are not directly confronted when they rear their head, they will multiply into something bigger. And the small fights for liberty absolutely matter. And so without knowing the specifics of your case or what that means for you, all I can tell is just kind of impart some general wisdom of fights that were not done at the local level and they thought it's not a big deal, and it grows to the state and the federal level and you lose those liberties in the future. So I don't know if that is helpful to you at all, but I do think that we need to fight at every single level. And look, I think the lockdowns will go down as one of the dumbest mistakes in American history. It really will. And immoral. And just, I know we have questions we have to get to here, but thank you. One out of four of young people have contemplated suicide in the last 90 days. Alcoholism, suicide, depression, social isolation, domestic abuse, sexual abuse. 100,000 businesses have closed in the last 6 months, and another 100,000 are probably going to close in the next 30 days. Billionaires have expanded their net worth by $682 billion. The average middle-class family has gone $5,000 or more into debt. These lockdowns were a luxury of the rich. They're unproven. They did not help slow the spread. They only temporarily stunted the inevitable. Countries that did not do mass lockdowns now have herd immunity, lower hospitalizations, lower death rates. The one-size-fits-all trying to kill a mouse with a missile will go down as one of the dumbest mistakes that we let this happen. We should have protested earlier. We should have sued more. We should have never allowed them to close our schools. And I think that it's a learning lesson for all of us and a teaching moment that when they take our freedoms away, we have to say no way unless there's a very good reason, and there wasn't. So anyway, that's I'll end with that. The lockdowns were a total mistake.
Hi, Charlie. What is your best advice to productively communicate with our liberal friends and loved ones and not damage the relationship?
Okay, so it's a very good question.
Yes, it is.
I can be somewhat helpful in this question. And I mean this with no joking. And I say this to young people all the time. And I say, if you want to get involved with Turning Point, if you want to take up the banner, be prepared to lose all your friends. Not because you will lose them, but they will leave you and they will tell you awful names and they'll come after you. It is an attribute of the left, which is that your political identity is some sort of a moral ruler or some sort of moral yardstick on how good of a person you are. And so just be prepared to lose those relationships. The best thing that we can do to interface with those people on the left is to ask questions. Do not tell them anything. Just endlessly ask questions and listen. Make them explain to you why they believe what they believe. Who is informing them of that? What is their factual basis? Has it ever worked before? Why do you believe that? And so the more you could dive into that, a great example is this. Here's how you can kind of short-circuit a socialist in 10 seconds or less. It's a magic trick. It's like Houdini. People say, it's the closest thing to a magic trick I can get to, which is someone says they're a socialist. And that's fine. I mean, there's plenty of them out there. And it's mostly because they've been taught it by some sort of self-righteous, foolish, deceitful, arrogant instructor in the academy. And generally, they'll say, I'm a socialist. I say, okay, do you trust the government? And they'll say, no, I don't trust the government. Then why do you want to make the government bigger? And at that moment, they'll have a decision to make. They'll either say, no, I actually want the government bigger, or no, I don't. And if they say they don't, they say, you're not a socialist. You might not know what you are, but you're definitely not a socialist. So maybe let's start to unpack what you are. Do you think freedom's important? Yes. Well, who gives you freedom? The government. No. Try again. The government. No. Try again. Do you think you have freedom naturally? Yes. Who's supposed to protect it? Government. Good. Do you think governments ever get out of control? Yes. Do you think governments can grow tyrannical? Yes. Do you think it's important we make sure that doesn't happen? Yes. So would you believe in a framework that makes sure that doesn't happen? Yes. Maybe you're far more conservative than you ever might have imagined. Questions, everybody, is how Jesus Christ communicated with every human being that's ever written the greatest book ever to exist in the history of the world, the Bible. Stop telling, start listening, and start asking. That's how you communicate. Wow. Thank you for your question.
Good. Very good. I know you have a flight. So I know you have a flight.
I'm doing all the talking.
No, that's good. Hey, we want to hear from you. You ready? You're okay to take a few more questions?
We can go 20 more minutes.
Okay.
I'll be generous tonight. The only problem, and I mean this, no, is that I just lose my voice and then it shoots off my whole week. So I have to, I know my limits on my, because I'm talking 7 hours a day. Other than that, I would literally stay till 10 p.m. So I got about 20 minutes left and then I got to stop talking for the night.
Hey, Charlie. So great to meet you. You just actually hired my nephew, so we're very happy about that.
Well, congratulations to him.
Thank you. You're going to like him. I was on a high, too, from this weekend, and then I listened to your video.
Which one?
I heard you cover Harris just now, but where people don't care about Biden.
Yes, that's correct.
And I am an active door knocker. I'm door knocking, in fact, the next 2 weeks heavily. And I'd like to have... I was so depressed today at all my girlfriends... try to get me off the cliff. But can you give me a solution to that? Because I'm going to be utilizing that as I door knock.
Yeah, so, well, let me say this. Please go knock doors in Arizona. We need you.
Yes.
Well, please go to... Someone drive her.
Take a bus.
Well, Trump's not going to win California. I'm sorry. It's not going to happen. In the future, maybe it's not going to happen here. We need you in Arizona. But it's important for other races and stuff here. And thank you for knocking on doors. I wish every conservative patriot knocked on 10 doors. It's so important. Seriously, it's awesome. I'll first say this. I get these messages all the time where it's like, I feel really good about Trump at 9 a.m. and I feel really bad at 9:30. It's like, you know, it's kind of the most bipolar election. It's like good news, bad, right? No. And I'm not excluded from that because I have this deluge of information that is so incredibly contradictory. Look, I'll say this again, that we need to lean in on who's actually going to be running the government. And I think the Joe Biden laptop thing is an exclusion to my argument. But I think it actually reinforces that Joe Biden's not going to serve out his first term. With this kind of corruption, this kind of questions, Pelosi will invoke the 25th Amendment and get him out of there. That 25th Amendment stuff is not for Trump. It is for Biden. And Pelosi and Kamala Harris are like this. Pelosi comes from the Bay Area. She runs the Bay Area. Kamala Harris was the DA. She's from there. She's a creature of the Pelosi political crime family. Mm. And so you have to understand that we need to, in my opinion, when you're talking to swing voters, communicate that Kamala Harris is going to be running the government. And I think we should be unafraid to say that. Biden is, some people still like him. No matter how much you throw at him, he's like, oh, I love Joe Biden. It's like, oh my gosh. So, and it's true. It's the more we've gone negative against him, the more his numbers have gone up. I think this story might actually break that. I do, because it's so bad. It's so bad, everybody. It just is. You read the emails, you're like, oh my gosh. Like, our foreign policy is being just completely steered by the wallets of the Bidens. It's worse than anything Hillary did. It really is. Wow. It's worse than Uranium One. It's worse than all of that stuff. And we have far more evidence of it. I mean, the Clintons at least destroyed their laptops. I mean, I mean, Hunter Biden never went through the Clinton school in bleach bidding. I mean, the first thing they teach you at the Clinton Foundation is you bleach bit everything, and you never go to a computer repair shop with your, like, and I told this to the anti-drug advocacy groups. I told them this. I say, if you want to tell kids why they shouldn't do drugs, show them this story of Hunter Biden dropping off the computer. No one should ever do cocaine again after you see how foolish you are when you do. It's incomprehensible that you would do this. And so, but it's really bad, everybody. I mean, I could go through it. You guys know it. Just follow the reporting that our entire foreign policy portfolio was being directed at the financial benefit of a certain family. It is everything that we wish wasn't true and then more. So next question. Thank you.
Hi, Charlie. I was actually in Arizona knocking doors this weekend.
There you go. Good.
So my name is James. I'm the president of Turning Point USA and Students for Trump at UC Irvine.
Right.
And my question for you is, what are your thoughts on universities forcing students to take vaccines in order to return back to campus?
Take back what?
Vaccines.
Take vaccines.
No way. Absolutely not. Don't take it. It's unconstitutional, and we should fight it through the state, local government, through lawsuits. They have absolutely no right whatsoever to force a vaccine on adults. None whatsoever. Zero. And I'm a big believer. And by the way, you should just buy a shirt. My body, my choice. It's that simple. It's amazing. The left, they want to give you the false freedom that you could terminate somebody else's DNA within you. Then they want to say that you don't have the freedom not to inject somebody else's DNA in you.
Wow.
Because a lot of vaccines in this country are made from aborted fetuses. Not all of them, but a lot are. Mm-hmm. A lot are from the fissile material from an aborted fetus. Think about that incredible philosophical and moral contradiction. It's okay to terminate, but it's not okay to reject the injection of that very same DNA that you were okay to terminate. So yeah, I mean, you should absolutely fight it, and I would, oh my gosh. I mean, I would do everything I possibly could to reject it. So thank you for your question. Next one.
Good evening, Charlie. My name is Israel, and I'm a huge fan of your podcast.
I think we've met before.
Maybe.
Okay.
I'm a first-time generation Mexican-American.
Yeah, thank you.
No surprise, I come from a huge family, and we meet every Sunday, me and my siblings. And it's frowned upon that I speak about Trump's policies and the reason they are that he's going to get my vote this year. Now, my question to you is, what advice would you give me that I'm trying to break out of my circle and become a bridge of information to my family?
So it's great. First of all, don't be belligerent, but don't be silent. Continue to communicate. Point out things to people that sometimes they don't want to hear it, that intersect their daily life. So I don't know, you know, what your parents or your sisters or your brothers or nieces or nephews or cousins do, but find specific news items that impact their life. So they might be small business owners about how 100,000 small businesses went under because we locked down our country. There's nothing controversial or political about that. And this is a big thing I want all of you guys to realize, is that the number one form of censorship in our country is self-censorship. It is not tech censorship. It is not other people shutting you up. It's you shutting up you. It's you not wearing that beautiful MAGA hat into the grocery store. And by the way, I'm glad you wore it tonight, and I hope you'll wear it to the local convenience store. And I'm the first one to admit that I self-censor. I am just as guilty as you guys are. Sometimes I don't want the fight. Sometimes I'm like, I got to go pick up dinner. You know, I'm not going to wear the MAGA hat in. And that's me saying that. I've had a long day. I'm exhausted. And then I stop myself afterwards. I'm like, next time I will. And I should. Because then I am already immediately judging a scenario that hasn't happened, and I'm letting them win. So I'm not acting like I'm above you guys in this, right? I'm not. But it's not that I'm afraid of it. It's like I don't want to have to deal with the lunatics like just screaming at me. But now I'm like, no. The minute I take that hat off when I go into the grocery store or into the gas station, that is a sign that the tyrant is winning. Right? That's self-censorship. Something as simple as I'm going to cover up my God is real shirt. I'm going to put the crucifix under my shirt, right? I'm going to take that bumper sticker off. You guys all have been through there. I've been there with you, right? Yeah. And the biggest complaint I have about the phrase the silent majority is the silent part. Yeah. Yeah. Because what if we were no longer the silent majority? And that's exactly where we should be in our country. So right. I started here. I ended up answering the question to you.
Next question.
We'll take a couple more. Yes.
Be right back.
Hello, my name is Sonia Green. It's a pleasure to be here and seeing you, Charlie Kirk. My question is, now that many are aware, what do you think is going to happen to the current processes of indoctrination in our primary schools all the way through high school?
I wish more people were aware. It is stunning to me how bad it has gotten in public education in our country. Critical race theory, white fragility, 1619 Project, teaching every white person that they're racist, teaching people that black people can't be racist because they're not in power. And I discovered something, and there's a fundamental truth to this. Do you guys ever notice how the left changes the meaning of words? You notice this?
Yes.
And this is a very important, and it's a very dangerous thing. They do this intentionally because when they're able to change the meaning of words, they're able to change whether or not we're able to find truth. This is why, in those of us that believe in the Bible, we're so focused on what exactly the original text said. That's why the Jews in Hebrews, and also the book of Hebrews and throughout the Bible, the actual meaning of words had so much weight. So for example, racism. I grew up believing that racism was one person of one skin color discriminating against another person of a skin color and having prejudice. That is what racism is. Don't let them say anything different. That is not what we're teaching our children. They believe racism is a power struggle, that it is impossible for a black person to be racist, that only white people can be racist. This is part of what critical race theory teaches. Like this, they have changed the meaning of racism. Same words, different definition, and they're using them flippantly, and they're teaching your children that. They've even changed the meaning of what it means to be a black person in this country. Joe Biden does not think you're black.
You are right. He doesn't think I'm black.
That's right. This is why they go after people like Candace Owens and Brandon Tatum with such harsh, you know, such incredible venom. They think your identity is solely linked to whether or not you're a leftist. That you suddenly don't become a black person if you don't agree with us. That is totalitarian and racist. And they're teaching your children that. They're teaching your children things that will result in a clash. They want it. They're pre-programming it. They're writing the script, everybody. The American experiment worked for a couple decades really well, post-civil rights era, 80s, 90s, early 2000s, when I grew up and when I was born, in the ideas of E Pluribus Unum, out of many one, that your skin color does not matter. I believe this. I was raised like this. We are now doing the opposite. We're teaching young people that skin color matters. We're now teaching people to find the differences. We're teaching people to divide one another based on skin color. We all know how this leads, where this leads. There is no harmony to this. There's just division. Let me be perfectly clear. Your skin color means nothing to me. Absolutely nothing. I don't care about the color of your skin.
That's right.
I care about your character. I care about your worldview. I care about your values. I don't care about what you look like. It is completely and totally irrelevant. And as soon as we start to say, I care about your skin color, the moment that we bend that knee, we have lost the civilization that we live in. It is that simple. Next question.
Hello, Charlie. Kenny Strawn, great to see you again.
Good to see you.
In the 3 years since I last saw you at the Newport Beach Western Regional Conference, what new challenges have arisen for Christians in this country?
That's a great question. Thank you for being here again, by the way. Yeah, it's awesome. And so some new challenges are, it's a very thoughtful question, actually, because a lot has changed in the last 3 years. And I actually think that for Christians, so many of you are being misled by your pastors. You just are.
Hey, hey, hey. No.
I've made many exclusions for you this evening. And you agree with me.
I know, exactly.
And I think that it's harder to be a disagreeable Christian than ever, and it's easier to be an agreeable Christian. And that's a very dangerous moment for American Christianity. When Christianity all of a sudden becomes completely harmonic with the Hollywood culture, but they just don't want to touch the Old Testament stuff. We don't like that. That's what some pastors say. That guy from Georgia says that. Or where they say, oh, no, no, we just want to focus on the we're okay with whatever anyone wants to do at all times stuff. Like, hold on a second. This is not a new phenomenon, but it's become very predominant in our country. And so I think the challenge right now in the body of Christ is going to be, do we believe in the inerrancy of Scripture? Do we believe in the totality of the Bible? Do we believe that Jesus Christ actually lived, died, and rose again on the third day? Or do we just kind of say it? And so the challenge is this, and this is the biggest challenge. This is the question for the church is, and I think God is testing the American church right now. I really do.
I believe so. Yeah.
The question is this, do you actually believe what you say?
Yes.
Because if your church is still closed, if you're pandering to these ridiculous lockdowns, and if you are going out of your way to mobilize your congregation to critical race theory and BLM Incorporated, I'm not the judge, but I doubt you actually believe what you say you believe. And that's a very, very difficult thing for me to say. But I find no other way to reconcile a closed church and a racially pandering church at this moment, if you actually believe in the totality and the inerrancy of Scripture, divinely inspired, and the triune God. Very hard. So I think God is testing us. And I think that this church and many others will step up to the plate. Great question. I think this will be the last question, okay?
Last question.
Sorry, guys. This will be the last question. Sorry.
Hey, Charlie. I go to UC Berkeley. And
give it up for a UC
Berkeley. Wow.
Now, wait, hold on. You're not a communist, right?
No.
She's not a communist. That's a big thing.
That's great. And I'm very outspoken about my conservative Christian beliefs.
You're very outspoken at UC Berkeley.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Amazing.
And students refuse to speak to me when they realize I'm conservative. So how can I start and maintain a dialogue with very liberal students?
So great. First of all, thank you for what you're doing. It's just so incredible. I mean, and I, by the way, I'm going to say this, and I hope it gets cut up and sent to all the pastors out there. She has way more courage than most pastors in our country. Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Far more courage.
Good for you.
Spectacular. I'm going to tell you something that you might not want to hear. You're not going to be popular with those views at Berkeley. But do this. You're a Christian, right?
Yes.
Understand that you're going to be held to a higher standard through your peers and friends. Do all things with 100% grace, 100% truth. Gruth, it's long week today. I'm only on my 8th hour of talking today. I think I'm doing okay, right?
So, great. 100%
grace, 100% truth, right? That was who Jesus was.
Mm-hmm.
Don't get angry. Love hopes all things, but do not compromise on your beliefs. Do not hedge. Don't put yourself in physically compromising situations because those things will arise.
Mm-hmm.
Be very, very aware of that. Because they will try to hospitalize you for your beliefs. which is happens all the time. It happened to our Turning Point USA leader this last weekend at the Women's March. Just happened to a black conservative in San Francisco. And if those of you with your mouths wide open, that's a real thing, right? So we just have to tell our Turning Point leaders, don't put in positions without you'll end up in the ER, because that happens. I know you guys laugh, but that's the part of our training. That's the country we live in. And my biggest piece of advice is you might not think you're changing minds. You might not think you're flipping opinions, but you might be the only exposure that certain people have to a Christian and a conservative. So make sure you take that with a great deal of responsibility. You don't go to Auburn, right? You don't go to a scant campus with lots of conservatives, right? So you might be the only point of contact that these people ever have to the gospel, to Christianity, and to conservatism. That's a lot of responsibility for you. But I think you're up to the task. So thank you, and do not back down.
10-year-old. Yeah, she
all right.
Wants...
We got
a little 10-year-old. What is your name?
Hi, my name is Indy DeBose. I'm 10 years old, and I would like to know how I can make a difference in my community.
It's amazing.
I think that's the best question we had all night.
It's phenomenal.
Very good.
So young people really give me hope. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to be very honest with you guys. And this is, if I can be blunt, the older generation does not.
How
old? No, I'm going to be honest, though.
She said how old.
and people like her give me hope because most old people who vote for Biden. Most 65-plus are going that way. It's just... And it's, I'm just telling you guys, generally, there's a country, and I'm not trying to blame you. I'm just telling you that this really gives me hope, that 10-year-olds and 11-year-olds and 12-year-olds, it's amazing. And so here's what you can do. Learn all the time. Seek wisdom. And at 10 years old, the best thing your parents can do to grandkids and young people is... teach the stories of America to young people. Make it personal. Tell them the names. Tell them the complications. Create the founders of our country into heroes in the eyes of America's youth. Because guess what? The Thomas Jefferson that she will end up hopefully loving at 10 years old will be under attack when she's 16. And she'll lean back on that, hey, I remember learning about Thomas Jefferson. I like that guy. I remember learning about George Washington. I grew up admiring, or Abigail Adams, or the great women that helped build this country, because there's so many of them. Mm-hmm. That's the first thing, is learn. The second thing is be active. You're not too young to knock on doors. You actually, I think you could win some votes for Trump. And the third thing is this. You're homeschooled, right? Which is why you're so clear in your thinking. No, it's true. The most amazing people I meet are homeschooled. They're steeped in wisdom. I'm such a fan of homeschooling, I can't even tell you. It's the solution to so many things. It's incredible. God bless those that homeschool. It's so incredible. The third thing is this, is that the people you talk to and your friends, as you grow older, never back down and always stand with courage. Be someone rooted in courage. Is so hard to find in America right now. So hard. That's why I love the young people that are standing up for things right now, despite the criticism. And our pastors that go through this. It's so easy right now not to stand with courage. It's so easy. Just to kind of retreat, wait for it to pass. Like tyranny is a hurricane, and all of a sudden you could wait for it to go over. No, it's here to stay unless we stand with courage. So thank you for what you're doing and for your incredible clarity at your young age. And I think one day I'll be working for you. So...
he wants to take one more, but I think did we send everyone off already?
No, I'm going to say one more thing.
Oh, yeah absolutely. Go ahead.
I want to thank you guys for coming tonight and all the overflows. Couple takeaway items. One way that you guys could really help me out and help us out. As you could tell, I'm working myself into the ground. I think we're doing pretty well with certain things. We're the hardest working podcast team in the country. We're doing 2 podcasts a day. We're doing 2 hours of radio a day. You guys can hear us on the Salem station as you drive home, actually. From 10 to 12, I think it's 870 or 890, where Prager's on every day. We're on 10 p.m. to midnight every night. So one way you could bless us is we're in an ever-present struggle against the multi-billion-dollar New York Times in the podcast charts. So free of charge, if every person watching this and in here took out your smartphone and typed in Charlie Kirk Show to your podcast provider and you hit that beautiful subscribe button, it might not seem like nothing. It's free of charge. We would surge in the charts and beat the New York Times. Now, you might not know how to do this, so just ask the 10-year-old how to subscribe on your smartphone. So, and for 10 people here tonight, I'm going to give out another 10 signed copies of my book. If you guys subscribe and email us your subscription, freedom@charliekirk.com. That's the email, okay? So 10 more signed copies will be mailed to you FedEx just for tonight. Say you were here, because I want to reward and bless you guys for being here, because you guys were amazing. This, can I do two more takeaways?
Yeah, please.
Second is this. Is, guys, we're in the crunch time right now. Commit yourself to do something new that you otherwise would not have done in the next 14 days to help save our republic. Maybe it's a road trip to Arizona. Maybe it's, I'm going to make phone calls every night, which you guys can do to battleground states through Trump victory, 20 phone calls a night. Maybe it's $5 to Donald Trump. Maybe it's $10. It's something. Maybe it's bringing friends to the polls. Whatever it might be, do it. We need your help. And the last thing is this. Win or lose on election night, we can't survive this many more close calls in our country. We're losing the culture. 43% of our generation thinks America's a good country. Only 43%. We got a lot of work to do. So win, lose, draw. Be daily committed to the activist mindset that we are going to save this beautiful gift that we have been given. We're doing that every single day with our podcast. We're doing that with our Turning Point USA leaders and our chapters. We're doing that through our videos. We're doing that through our empowerment. We're doing that through the people that have come through the ranks of Turning Point USA, like Candace Owens and Brandon Tatum. Every single one of you possess the power. And I mean this. I'm just a kid from Chicago who never went to college, who decided to speak out and work harder than other people. All of you have the power to do this. It's a republic if you can keep it. Now's the time for action. Let's get working. God bless you guys. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you want to get involved with Turning Point USA, go to tpusa.com. where we are playing offense with a sense of urgency to win America's culture war, where you want to make our kids love America again. Start a chapter, get engaged, get involved at tpusa.com, tpusa.com. Email us your questions, freedom@charliekirk.com, freedom@charliekirk.com. Right now, in the last couple weeks before the election, we need you guys, all hands on deck. If you want to get involved with our political arm, go to Turning Point Action. It is tpaction.com. And finally, thank you for supporting us at charliekirk.com/support. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. God bless.